everyone, welcome to the Front Stretch Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Albino. In a moment, I'll be joined by my co-host, Mike Neff, to discuss the playoff weekend at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Plus, on Wednesday, the 2021 Cup Series schedule was announced, so we'll give our take on what we do and don't like for next year's schedule. We've also got Ross Chastain coming up later in the show to discuss his weekend in the Xfinity Series at Las Vegas, outlook for Talladega this weekend with Colleague Racing, and also moving to Cup next year with Chip Ganassi Racing full-time. So let's talk Vegas with Neff. All right, Neff, surprisingly, we got a lot to talk about following the race weekend at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. I say surprisingly because, if I'm being honest, Neff, the first three quarters of Sunday's Cup race, in addition to the two races, the Xfinity and the Truck Series, I thought was lackluster at best. Do you agree?
Yeah, I'm completely on board with you, man, and I was so disappointed because Vegas for years now has been one of the showcase races on a schedule thanks to the track surface wearing out and just the combination of things we had. And apparently they brought a new, I think it was a new right side tire this time, and I don't know how the tire results in greater aero dependence, but man, it did, because if you got out front, it was over. And we saw it in every single race all weekend long. There was a real intense battle for about a lap and a third to a lap and a half after every restart. And once the lead car officially established themselves in the front, you waited until the next caution before we could have any kind of a change or, you know, green flag pit stops. That was it. It was, yeah, it was very disappointing, to say the least. But
I expected a lot more, too. The restarts, like you said, were wild. But we've seen, obviously, over the past almost two full years now, restarts are wild with this package, with the 550 horsepower package. And then, like you said, once, you know, I get a couple laps in, it's pretty much single file. And we even saw that in the Xfinity Series this weekend, which, you know, typically they're abnormal to Cup and trucks at times, as they drive similar. So, it was disappointing. Tires did wear, which was cool. In the Cup race, I know there was fall off of nearly 2 seconds from the beginning to the end of the run.
But it didn't matter.
That's
the part I don't get. There was 2 second fall off, but Kurt Busch stays out on 35 lap old tires and is still able to go on the mat through two laps at least. I mean, that was insane that he was able to not lift with 30 some lap old tires on three consecutive restarts.
Yeah.
It just made no sense.
At least the Xfinity Series had a little bit of off throttle time compared to Cup. But in the end, so you brought him up. Kurt Busch got to victory lane, snapping a winless streak of over a year. But Neff, it was Matt McCall, who I know you've worked with him in the past with some of your writing for Front Stretch, who really set the team up. During a cycle of green flag pit stops, Busch stayed out late, as did about eight or nine other drivers. And then there was a caution right in the middle of green flag pit stops for Jimmy Johnson's blown right front tire, debris, you know, spreading all across the track. Busch was the only playoff car on the lead lap. Everyone else took the waiver out. That was wild. And he had to hold on for three restarts getting the victory, so he earned it. But he was a 10th to 15th place car all night. So it was pretty impressive that he, you know, got out front and kept it out front. But it goes back to what you said just a minute ago.
Yeah, it was curious, and I was kind of interested, and I've been meaning to go back and watch it again on the DVR. When Johnson had his issue, the first shot they showed of him coming out of turn two onto the backstretch, somebody else was down on the inside of the track, looked like a piece of debris shot up behind their car before the stuff started flying out from under Johnson's. And I'm sure Johnson already had the flat, but I think somebody else dropped the initial piece of debris. But whatever it was, for the people screaming, you know, that NASCAR should have been able to let that run its course before they threw the caution, there was no way. There was debris everywhere, and you'd have had a half dozen to a dozen cars probably have flat tires if they hadn't thrown a caution.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree that NASCAR did throw the caution, but whenever we see this, the running order always gets jumbled up, and it's going to. You had, you know, Denny Hamlin, who led a race high 121 laps a lap down. Alex Bowman, it looked like it was going to be a battle between Bowman and Denny there, and it cycled through. Obviously, we didn't get to see that. But ultimately, running order all jumbled up, and the outcome reminds me a lot of, I don't know if you agree, Texas, just, 2.5 months ago, when Austin Dillon and Tyler Reddick took no tires, got out front, this time around, was Bush really hit the jackpot during the cycle of stops. And it was funny because McCall came on the Zoom call later on that evening, and he said it really wasn't the right call to make because they were going to pay for it in the long run, had it cycled out. But it was their only hope of salvaging a bad night.
It was the only call they could make. I mean, you have two options here. You do what everybody else is doing, and you finish 10th to 12th.
Right.
Or you roll the dice and take a shot. And going into this round, I think we all were on board thinking that Bush was one of the cars was going to struggle to make it past this round.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to roll the dice and take a shot. Now you got it down to 8 dudes. So, and I've always, it hasn't really paid out as much as I thought it would over the years, but back when the chase first started, Kurt Busch had about the best average finish over the chase tracks of anybody in the series. It just something about the tracks that were at the end of the season really fit him well. And, you know, with the power that they're creating and McCall on the box, I don't put it by them getting to the Final Four. And again, you get to the Final Four, you never know what's going to happen.
Right, and this was the first, like, we've seen surprise runs this playoffs by Austin Dillon getting consecutive top fives, but this was the first surprise winner, I would say, of the playoffs. You had Harvick win two and Keselowski win one, dominating fashion. So, but I truly think out of the 12 guys remaining, I think the one team has, on average, probably the slowest car this year. I mean, maybe on average, if you go way back to the beginning, maybe Dillon. And Bowman's had times where he's been fast and then other times where he's just nothing could go right, but Bush said post-race that he need, in order to advance, just advance to the round of eight, he would need everything to go right. And everything went right for one night for him, at least the last 40 laps or so.
Matters in this format.
Yeah, and then once you get out front, like you said, you know, Matt DiBenedetto had the same, he pitted on that while the caution flew, so he resumed as the leader. I thought, you know, maybe DiBenedetto, we were texting back and forth, I'm like, I'm thinking DiBenedetto might get this. And get his first victory, and that would have been a huge deal. But even probably a bigger deal, that Kurt got his victory.
Old age and treachery outdoes youth and exuberance every time.
Yeah, Kurt said post-race that, you know, Hamlin, because Hamlin pitted later on with another caution, that he would have had a very hard time getting around the one car because he was going to make it very wide. Because Kurt, I mean, right now he's ninth, you know, without the win, he's ninth in points, he's outside the playoffs. So that win's kind of, I'm not going to say saved him, but it locked him into the next round.
Oh, absolutely saved him. There's no question about that. The thing that I found interesting, and I don't know that he'll ever fess up to it because he doesn't want to lose that advantage, but he noted on those last couple restarts that it was something he learned from drag racing that actually gave him an advantage, and he was like shot out of a cannon on the last two restarts. So I don't know what in the world he was doing, but whatever it was, he needs to remember it because it worked like a champ.
Yeah, he had a good 3-4 car length lead going into turn one, both of those restarts. So it was also cool to see the raw emotion from Kurt post-race. That continued on the Zoom media call where he was nearly in tears a few times from what I could gather. And, you know, it's weird because obviously Kurt's a Vegas native. He's born up, you know, he grew up there, born in Vegas, grew up racing the Bullring right outside on the backstretch. And when it comes to Vegas, the 1.5 mile track, his worst track on the circuit by far. Going into the last night's race, he had 21 starts, an average finish of 22.5. So for any champion, that's bad.
Yeah, 20 years of trying.
Yeah.
Exactly, but that's what it felt like for him. And that's why I completely understood the emotion because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it's like Newman or Stewart or Briscoe winning in Indianapolis. I mean, you're talking about a place that was just an integral part of why you're in racing. And to be disappointed so many times there and finally be able to get your hands around it and get to hoist a trophy from it, it's just, I mean, that's a once-in-a-lifetime occurrence. And I would have been disappointed if I didn't see the emotion out of him. And I was glad to see it. I also thought it was cool that Kyle even seemed to have emotion for his brother, because those two have had an interesting relationship over the years, and it has felt like, you know, we've seen the mellower Kyle the last few years, but it feels like just in general, those two are becoming closer the last handful of years. And I don't know if it's because Kyle's a dad or Kurt knows he's getting near the end of his career or whatever, maybe both of them. But it was cool to see Kyle have the emotion too and to understand how important that was for Kurt. But definitely a cool thing for Kurt because, like I said, he's been chasing that bogey for a long time. And really, I'm trying to remember, I only remember like one or two times where he's led remotely at one of those Vegas races. He's always been struggling.
Yeah, I think the most laps he's ever led there is like 30-something. I was looking last night. But anyway, yeah, to the Kyle subject, yeah, Kurt said post-race that their relationship this year has really blossomed, and he thinks part of that's because of Brexton. And just the night before on Saturday, Kurt wasn't there, but Kyle, their parents, Samantha, obviously Kyle's wife, were all there in attendance for Brexton's first win at 5 years old. So that was pretty cool. And Kurt's, he said they're living like a family bubble, so they're spending a lot of time with each other during the COVID-19 pandemic. And I bring that up, Neff, because it was, you know, I feel like out of all the races we've seen this year, all the, you know, celebratory moments, I think, yes, you know, on Sunday night, it was probably the most, I can't come up with the right word for it, but where the air was kind of let out of the building, because you had Kurt so happy, obviously, for, well, you said 20 years of trying, and then at his home track, and then nobody there to celebrate with him, family, friends, whomever.
Yeah, it was disappointing. And I mean, and there's a bunch of this COVID stuff that has been disappointing to say the least. But yeah, that was a definite bummer. It reminded me a lot of when Harvick won at Darlington.
Yep, the first race.
You know? And at least Kurt was celebrating. I mean, when Harvick got out of that car, he looked lost. He looked like he just didn't even know what to do. So yeah, it was great that he at least had his team, and his team was truly pumped up about it. But yeah, it would have. And again, it's the frustration of this damn thing that we can't have anybody there. It just seems idiotic to me, especially when right down the road in the casinos they're packed in, throwing dirty money all over the place. But I mean, I hope that we're getting closer and closer to the end of this thing. It scares me to death that I see stuff in 2021 already getting postponed, and I feel like that we may be in for another year of this junk, and I don't know if anybody's going to survive another year of this stuff.
And that's the problem I have with it, too, when you mentioned the casinos right down the street in Vegas. I don't know their occupancy levels. They might vary. I listened to a podcast with Brendan Gong, who obviously his father owns.
And he knows.
Yeah, he owns South Point Casino, which sponsored the race yesterday, and he kind of, it was just 2 weeks ago, he was on the podcast, and he was mentioning all the protocols and the precautionary actions that they have to follow in Vegas. But for the governor to not allow even 10%, which it holds 80,000 people, I believe that's the attendance, you know,
somewhere right around there, yeah.
Yeah, for Vegas. They've taken out a lot of seats lately, too. But still, I mean, 10%, at least you got some people there and bringing some money to town, because I think it was, I read Jeff Gluck's column from Sunday night, and he mentioned that the last updated, I guess, new, not residents, but people coming into the city to gamble, really, is 1.4 million, or tourists, I should say, and that was in July alone. So since then, that hasn't been updated in terms of tourists, but 1.4 million people come into traveling during a pandemic, I mean, that's, I don't know. I feel
but we can't have 8,000 people watch a race.
Yeah, that's a little frustration. And Kurt was, he was definitely a little frustrated about it too. But good for him getting the win, his first win of the year. Anything else on Kurt?
Yeah, and I'm glad for McCall too, because as you said, I've known Matt for a long time back when he was racing late models. I used to help Randall Burnett, who's Tyler Reddick's crew chief, when he was racing. And he and McCall were both classmates at UNCC in their racing program. There's a handful of those guys that are all mixed around in the garage now. And I honestly feel like McCall got a really raw deal in his racing career, because he got a tryout in an Xfinity ride, and they gave it to another driver. And McCall did a better job of bringing the cars home but the guy that got the ride had one or two better finishes, but wrecked out of anything he didn't have a good finish in. So it was upsetting that McCall didn't get a better shot, because I still think he's a really good driver. But he's also incredibly smart, and he'll play it off that that wasn't really the right call, but that was absolutely the right call, and it paid out. And I mean, you're rolling dice in Vegas, man. That's where you're supposed to do it, above and beyond. So I was really happy for Matt, because I know he's taken some heat about the performance of that one car, and I honestly feel like if they hadn't been able to get, I don't know about a win, but to at least a round of eight this year, his job might have been in jeopardy. But I'm pretty sure that now, winning this race, that's got that all taken care of, and I think he's going to be a crew chief for a long time, but really happy for him to see him land a victory.
Yeah, the past 2 years since, you know, Kurt's been with the Ganassi, they get off to really good starts, but seem to kind of, last year they're out in the first round of the playoffs, him and McCall. So I agree. I think it's a big win for Kurt and McCall. And surprisingly enough, this is just Kurt's fourth playoff victory since 2004, when the first year of the playoffs. Yeah, his first in 9 years. So yeah, it's surprising to see Kurt get all of his wins in the beginning of the year. Recently, anyway. So,
and I'm trying to remember, he had one of them in there when he wasn't in the playoffs. One year, I seem to remember him stealing a win when he wasn't in the playoffs. I don't remember if he'd been eliminated or if he didn't even make the playoffs that year. But there was one year in there where he did that.
So
I was also just looking at his stats. This is his third top five at Vegas in 21 starts. He's got a third in 2005 and a fifth in 2019. So everything else in that has been, got a couple ninth places in there. Everything else was about outside the top 10.
Yeah, it's by far his worst track. So he hit money. He hit the jackpot by winning and locking himself into the next round.
Kind of momentum they can have going forward from this.
Sure. And with him winning, it ultimately stopped Denny Hamlin, who led a race high 121 laps. Also Alex Bowman, who, you know, it looked like it was going to be a duel between the 88 and the 11. Had the cycle of green flag stops cycled through. And Bowman had gotten by the 11. So for the 88 and F, I feel like it's a missed opportunity, but not of their own doing, as opposed to maybe the spring race where they were catching Blaney for the lead and pitted during the light caution.
Yeah, I agree. This is one of those that it was just a racing luck thing. They made the right calls. They were doing the right strategy. In fact, they looked better because of the fact on their last pit, they beat Hamlin out.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, when they pitted a lap earlier than Hamlin did, performed better on pit lane, and ended up beating Hamlin when Hamlin came back out on the track. So they were doing everything right, and unfortunately, just one of those racing breaks where a piece falls off a car, and then all sorts of pieces fall off a car, and they had to throw a caution.
Yeah, and I think Bowman's got five top tens in the last six races, and it reminds me of earlier in the year, like the beginning of the year. They came out guns blazing this year, and he won the third race of the year at Fontana. He had two top fives in the first four races, and then he led 100, and I think it was 64 laps in the Coke 600, but ultimately had a bad late race restart, finished deep in the field. And then they've just shown no speed for so long, for months, 3 months or so. Got a top five at Dover a little over a month ago now, and they've gotten five top ten since then. So it looks like they've got a little bit of their mojo back. And earlier in the year, I thought they could be a sneaky pick for the championship four, like, you know, first four or five races of the year, I thought that. And I'm not saying that he's going to get – he might not even get to the final eight. He's only got 9 point cushion right now. But he's good at Talladega, and he's very good at the Roval with finishes of second and fourth. So don't sleep on this 88 team.
Yeah, but you got Kyle Busch is the one that's 9 points True. Behind him. So that's and we didn't really mention much about Kyle at this race. Kyle looked very strong, even with his extracurricular activities that kind of put them in a bit of a box that we'll talk about here in a minute. But he showed strength and rebounded to a great finish. I mean, at the end of the race there, they were kind of out of sync and back in the pack. So on that last the last chance they had a chance to take tires, they got tires, started 23rd, I think, and they had two restarts in there and ended up with a sixth place finish.
So solid.
That was some serious wheeling over those last couple couple of restarts, but they, again, it's been a rough year for them, and I don't know what's going to happen with him. I still think he's going to win at the Roval, and if that happens, then Bowman is going to need to do some moving if he's going to try and stay in contention.
Yeah, you better have a good weekend this weekend at Talladega if that's the case. But you mentioned the little extracurricular activity with Kyle Busch, so I want to talk about that a little bit here, Neff, because Denny Hamlin was the beginning of Stage 2. I think it was on the first restart of Stage 2. Made a late entry into Turn 3 under Kyle Busch, and who he was battling side-by-side with Joey Logano. And they were battling for the lead. And it looked like it kind of surprised Busch. The 18 went up the track. 22 had no clue. They were three wide. I was on the 22 radio at the time. And they made contact. Logano had to pit for a left rear tire rub. Kyle Busch had a little right rear rub, but not too much. Now, I think we differ on this. So tell me what you thought of this incident.
Before that incident happened, Logano made a bonsai block on the backstretch on Chase Elliott.
Yep.
About wrecked him. Earlier on in the race, it may have been Kyle, but it may have been somebody else, but Logano made a couple just, I would call them reckless blocks. I mean, you're behind the guy, so you got to anticipate it, but it was really early to be making the kind of moves he was making. And we know that Kyle's had some issues with Joey in the past.
Mm-hmm. At so Vegas.
I think it was one of those deals where he sees that going on. He's racing Joey down into the corner and sees that they're going to be three wide. Joey doesn't give him any room. I legitimately think Kyle just lost his temper and door slammed Joey. It looked to me because it had been one thing if he kind of drifted up into Joey, but he turned right. I mean, he moved a full half a lane to make the contact with Joey. It wasn't a kind of move that you see Kyle make, even if he's trying to avoid something. And that's why I watched it, I replayed it a couple times, and it sure looked to me like he intentionally door slammed him, which ended up having a negative impact on both of them.
And I also watched the replay a couple of times, and I disagree because I think Hamlin's entry, his move to counter underneath the Kyle was pretty late. And yes. And because of that, I think it truly startled Kyle. And I know obviously they don't have much room to work with, and I think Logano was just running his race where he was gonna arc it down into the corner like he would if they were two wide. And as I mentioned, he didn't know they were three wide at the time. They did tell him, but it was very late, and it was a late move. So I just think that's a racing deal, and it is ironic that it comes a week after at Bristol where they had an incident where Kyle's trying to put Logano a lap down, saying after the race there's a reason why he has no friends, called him a dickhead, and they've had problems at Vegas in the past too. So
he's trying to put him two laps down.
Two laps down, my bad. Two laps down.
That was the part. It's one thing if you're putting a guy a lap down. He was trying to put him a second lap down.
Correct.
And Logano driving like Ryan Newman. It was not really acceptable.
I feel like everyone comes to expect that from Logano now. And it's won him a championship, it's lost him a championship. Won him 2018, lost in 2015 when he had the issues with Matt Kenseth. So, I don't know. I don't think he's among the championship favorites this year. And if he gets to Phoenix, there's a lot of receipts to be paid from some drivers from this year.
Yep.
Bubba Wallace comes to mind at the Daytona Road Course. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. could race him hard for wrecking him at Dover. Kyle, if Kyle doesn't get there. There's so many drivers. Chase, obviously.
And don't forget, Martinsville's the cutoff.
Yeah.
Get to Phoenix. That's true. I will be shocked if Joey Logano is able to race in the Final Four. Because I seriously feel like if he's got a shot at being in the Final Four, somebody will take him out of Martinsville.
In each of the last 2 years, Logano's been the center of attention post-race at Martinsville in the fall race with Denny Hamlin last year with the fight, and then the year before with Martin Truex Jr., the bonsai move he made on him. So,
right.
Yeah, and you brought up the big block he made down the backstretch a few laps before that on Chase Elliott. And so then you hear on the radio that Chase said, make sure the nose is okay from that dipshit up there, talking about the 22 of Logano. And his crew chief, Alan Gustafson, responded by saying, someone needs to send Logano, essentially wreck him, sooner rather than later. So they've obviously got history from this year, too. It started at Bristol when they wrecked the spring Bristol race, when they wrecked for the win with a few laps to go. So yeah, Logano's making enemies, not making friends, but I truly feel like that's what he's known for at this point. We've seen it for 12 years.
And again, that's the way he chooses to drive. Don't forget, Dale Earnhardt won 7 championships driving like an asshole and didn't make any friends the whole time doing it. So, you know, you can make that bed and live in it. And let's be honest, we've seen that with Ross Chastain, too.
Mm-hmm.
When Ross Chastain takes no prisoners and fully expects to not be given any. You know, he doesn't expect anybody to do anything for him. He takes what he wants to take, and if he has to give it, you know, that's the way it is. So that's an option, and that's an option that Joey has taken. And, you know, that's the problem now is that back, you know, 20 years ago, the championship didn't come down to one race.
Right.
And in the modern era, the way we choose this championship, that's a really razor-edge line to try to walk to know that you won't make that many enemies in the garage and then expect them to not try to take you out, especially when it's a half-mile short track as the cutoff race before you go to the Final Four.
Right. And Logano's proven to run really well there, as has Chase Elliott, Kyle Busch, a few of the guys that he's had incidents with. Yeah, Denny Hamlin. So, yeah, this will be an ongoing story here over the final month of the season. And to Logano's credit, you know, obviously we mentioned the incident with Kyle. It dropped him to a lap down, and he didn't get his lap back until the second or third from, I think it was the second to last caution. And over the last 20 laps or so, if that, he got to 14th. So it's a respectable night. It's better than what he would have been, 26th, 27th or so.
At one point, they were actually 2 laps down for a while.
Yeah, so.
They did a yeoman's effort to get back to it. And it was kind of funny because he and Keselowski both seen, I mean, obviously Joey's was partly from damage received, but he and Keselowski both seemed to be a little off this weekend. But DiBenedetto and Blaney were flying. So it was funny. It was kind of a flip-flop this weekend because obviously leading into this, it was DiBenedetto and Blaney that didn't perform as well as those two did. And to see that kind of flip-flop. But I was a little surprised, especially at Keselowski, because he's usually pretty decent at Vegas.
So I was also surprised with Keselowski, but we've talked about this the last 2 times that we've had a podcast following Las Vegas. During the race at some point early on, they had the hood up on that car, and they were turning wrenches and changing shit and trying to get the car better, and ultimately had 2 top tens because of it. On Sunday, he got up to 7th or 6th late, but ultimately fell to 13th on that late race restart when there was chaos everywhere. So, and he's won there, 3 times? He's one of the better racers in the Cup Series at Vegas, but it was odd how it was kind of flip-flop from the first round. With DiBenedetto and Blaney running really well. Obviously, DiBenedetto had a big second-place finish, performing well at the right time, with October 1st being the deadline, that's later this week, of being renewed at Wood Brothers. So that's also something to look forward to. Neff.
Yeah, I'll be incredibly sad if they don't renew him.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I expected more from him this year. He's got the same amount of top fives as he did in the 95 last year. 2 runner-up finishes, both at Vegas, but kind of by happenstance, with strategy coming into play both times. So he made the playoffs. That's a chalk. But also, just look at the past couple months and how they've ran. It's kind of, I would imagine it's been a little frustrating for him. Plus, you're racing for your life.
Absolutely. I know that there's some guys waiting in the wings to go into some quality Ford rides, and that plays into this, but, I mean, just let the guy have
a second year.
I mean, in all honesty, like a 3-year window where he's not racing for his life, because he's been racing for his life pretty much since he got into series.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to see him be able to approach the racing just worried about racing and not worried about whether he's going to have food on the table after this season.
And unfortunate, that's the world we live in right now, where a lot of deals are 1-year deals. Keselowski signed a 1-year deal for at Penske in a renewal. So Yeah, unfortunately, with the sponsorship dollars and the way the business model kind of is at, and drivers wanting more money, a bigger paycheck, maybe like a Keselowski, and they can't get it because of the pandemic, and you know, money revenue being down, well, they're going to sign a one-year deal. And in that case, I feel like DeBenedetto's is based on performance. And he's performed well this year. I personally thought he'd be better. But it's also his first year in a really quality ride. So that you got to take that into account as well. Neff, I want to look at the playoff leaderboard. I don't really want to preview Talladega because it could be a one-lane Memorial Day parade, or it could be a crapshoot like Daytona and Talladega in the spring, and I kind of expect that. Kurt Busch is obviously locked. Harvick and Hamlin look really good, 58 and 61 points to the good. But from Keselowski on down, none of them are safe. Keselowski's 16 up, Truex plus 15, Logano plus 11, Chase Elliott plus 10, Alex Bowman plus 9, Kyle Busch minus 9, Clint Boyer minus 20, Eric Allmendinger minus 27. Austin Dillon, who looked like he was going to have another good run last night and ended up finishing 32nd, 32 points back because he had a power steering belt break.
I think he had more than that. I think he had all his belts
break. Yeah, he thought it was power steering, but it could have been more. And they had to get a lot of water in that car because he said on the radio got up to 400 at one time, which that's not ideal. That's still functioning. So, you know, when we look at this, like I said, I don't think we should really preview the playoffs, at least, you know, the cutoff race at the Roval until we get through this weekend because the points could change drastically. But I think from fourth down, no one's safe.
Well, yeah, and the other exciting thing about it is you got Clint Boyer, former winner at Talladega, Eric Almirola,
very good,
great plate racer, Austin Dillon, great plate racer. So you're four guys technically below the cutoff line, although Kurt Busch has the win, so ideally it's Kyle who's below it. But the four guys that are 9th through 12th in points are all good plate racers. And it's the recipe is already in the oven and cooking for total chaos going into the Roval, which will just lead to total chaos at the Roval. So I'm with you. I don't see how Harvick and Hamlin don't advance, even if they freaking off after lap one at Talladega. I think they're still going to advance. But once you get below them, everybody else, it's perilous. And you hope that the guys that are up front running for the championship and can make it through clean and we get to settle it out that way. But it's Talladega. It's a super speedway, and we know that probably won't happen. And we saw it earlier this year that they ran like 85% of the race, and it was all relatively boring. I mean, it was entertaining, but it wasn't exciting. And then the end of the race was total pandemonium. And now you're talking about championship on the line. So I think it's going to be crazy. It's exciting to think that you legitimately have three guys that are in a position that could very well, I mean, it's not a must-win yet, but three guys that could easily win here and totally upset the apple cart if they do.
Yeah, and I'm the playoffs seem to have a funny way of working out sometimes, where obviously in this, you know, in this format, the best eight drivers, the best four drivers, the best 12 drivers, it doesn't matter how you break it up, don't always advance and usually don't advance. So I would not be surprised at all to see one of the three that you mentioned win, or Kyle Busch even getting a win. I know he's had, you know, he runs well in the super speeders, but somehow always wrecks. He finds himself in the middle of the chaos. So yeah, you mentioned Eric Almirola, 8 straight top tens at Talladega, including a win 2 years ago in this race, finished 3rd earlier this year, going backwards across the finish line, nonetheless. So yeah.
Which out, but it's actually a benefit because the transponders on the cars are mounted on the rear axle, so when you go around backwards, you're actually gaining about 8 feet versus the cars that are going forward as you go across the transponder line.
That's
so that
true.
Helps about getting that third place finish.
That is true. So yeah, I think I would not surprise me at all to see one of those three or four drivers win. And you mentioned how they're not in must wins, but they're gonna have to race for stage points as opposed to Denny Hamlin and Kevin Harvick. I mean, I don't see Hamlin staying in the back, but But I could see Harvick. That usually is forte. That's usually, oh, yeah.
That's Harvick's MO.
Yeah. But with Hamlin, I just don't see that happening. But maybe it's the smart move. I don't know. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But I'm excited for Talladega, as always, especially the playoff race
there. I'm curious to see what Logano does, too. Because he's known for getting out there and mixing it up and wanting to lead the whole race.
Yep. Won both stages at Daytona.
Yeah, and in reality, that's probably not the greatest strategy based on where he's at in points. But, again, you run up front, you win stage points, you win a stage or two, that all adds up going down the line. It could be a benefit, especially if five or six guys are racing scared at the back of the pack.
I think everyone's racing for stage points except for Hamlin and Harvick. And Hamlin maybe to a degree, because we've seen it. If they're running a single file line, he'll be the guy to go to the bottom and try and make something happen. So
I feel like Truex is going to ride in the back. And I think Chase Elliott might ride in the back, too.
The only issue with that is you're missing out on stage points. And yep. they could be vital. And
well, there's that, and you may get wrecked out of 39 spot like true. Which did a few years back.
That is true as well. But I just think with being so, like I said, fourth to ninth is so close. They're only 25 points apart, I believe. Yeah, 23 points apart. That's very close for comfort, too close for comfort. And especially if, you know, you get those stage, or you don't go after those stage points, and then one of those final four win, then that eliminates another spot. But yeah, I'm excited, as always, for Talladega. Now, if anything else on the Cup Series before we moved on to Xfinity and trucks?
No, hated to see Corey LaJoie get wrecked out right there at the end on Sunday night, because he had a really good race and was about to have like a, remember where he was running top 15, I know, he was close to top 10 if I'm not mistaken, and then got wrecked out there right at the end of the race, which was a bummer, but hoping he ends up getting a ride here soon again, waiting to see these silly season dominoes fall.
Yeah.
Nope, I think that covers us for now on the old Cup Series.
Yeah, it's getting to that time of silly season. We're getting into October. A lot of stuff's going to be jumbled around here, as we saw last week with the Michael Jordan announcement, and then also with Ross Chastain going to Ganassi. Neff, Xfinity, another guy that kind of falls into silly season. Chase Briscoe picked up his eighth victory of the season, made a big statement, I believe, on Saturday night, leading 164 of 200 laps. He set out on this number at the beginning of the year, 8. He needed 8 wins, he believed, to get to the Cup Series. He's there. What did you think of his performance on Saturday night?
I thought it was dominating. And we talked about this last week on the podcast, that I was worried about him over the summer, but then hearing them talk as we rolled into the playoffs here, that it sounds like the family was trying to try some stuff and doing some testing, pulling the old Chad Knaus, Jimmy Johnson way of playoff racing. And so they've shown out here the last couple, 3 races that they're a force to be reckoned with. And I thought it was a big statement. It shows that, you know, those people who were counting the 98 out for taking a chance to win a championship were crazy. As far as the 8-10 races, whatever it is, he's ultimately going to win in this thing. I mean, I think it justifies getting him into the Cup Series, but I don't know if that's a smart move or not, based on the,
we'll get to that in a second,
the environment of the Cup Series. Yeah, we'll talk about that in a little while.
Yeah, so with Briscoe in his 8th victory of the year, it's big because he's obviously locked into the round of 8 now. Got 5 more, 7 more playoff points because he swept all 3 stages. And I think more than anything, it's just
the first time he ever did that.
Yeah, first time he ever did that. Most laps he's ever led in a single race. He said it was too easy. It was almost too easy the way he had to drive that car the other night. And a lot of laps he didn't lead were green flag pit stops, or else maybe he would have led all 200 laps, which is something we don't see anymore with all the different, you know, variation of strategies. But, yeah, he's won 3 of the last 7 after winning 5 of the first 13. Had a little dry spell there, but I would not, if I'm a Chase Briscoe fan, I wouldn't be concerned at all. It's clear he's going to be in Phoenix unless there's a catastrophe happens.
It's like Hamlin and Harvick. I mean, it would take a catastrophic turn of events for them not to make it.
And especially in the Xfinity Series, where it is top-heavy this year, 7 drivers have at least 2 wins of the regulars, but but then the five other playoff drivers have none. So there's a pretty big cutoff, and especially when you have him at 8, then Cindric at 5, then, you know, there's a few guys as you trickle down, Allgaier with 3. But, yeah, I think he's – I don't know if he's the favorite. I mean, we went over our predictions last year – or last week. You had him winning the championship. I have Allgaier. But you did bring up a good point in the Cup Series, so I want to get into that a little bit. Like I said, he wanted 8 wins to prove to owners – proved to Ford that he belongs in Cup. He said that publicly at Daytona. I was there when he said it. Is it the right move, do you think, to move to the 14 or move wherever? Or do you think, because let's face it, Clint Bowyer isn't announced, hasn't re-signed yet. Stuart Haas Racing hasn't announced who will be in that 14. Do you think, like, what should the 14 team do? Should they go with Bowyer for one more year and you got the... You know, you're going to a new car in 2022. Maybe that's the year for a change. Or do you go with fresh blood and Briscoe?
I'm kind of with you on that. I know we talked about this a little bit before we started recording tonight. That, I mean, I feel like he's ready. But just the environment where we're getting ready to go to a completely different car in 2022. Hope, knock on wood, and that doesn't get postponed again. So I don't know what benefit there is of having him move up and spend 1 year in the existing car to learn it, only to have to relearn a whole new car the following year. I mean, I know there's going to be similarities, but at the same time, it may also lead to some bad habits. And you get used to the feel of some things in the existing car and go to the new one, and it's completely different. I mean, I know just off the top of my head, your sidewall flex and your tires is going to be different because they're using a lower profile tire since they're doing 18 instead of 15 inches. So the whole interaction of the shocks and the bump stops and everything with the tire is going to be completely different on this new car because it's going to be more rigid. And I think they're going to have to build some more pliability into the rest of the chassis to take that into account. And that may completely change the way the car drives. So if you turn around and spend 36 races learning how to drive a new car that you've not driven before, only to have to turn around and completely learn another one, I feel like that may be detrimental. So as much as I feel like he's proven that he deserves a shot, I think he's more than proven he deserves a shot, I just don't know if now's the right time to give it to him.
I agree with you. And I also think that he's ready. It's clear that he's ready. We've had the same discussion last year, even 2 years ago, like guys like Christopher Bell, last year with Tyler Reddick, Cole Custer. Obviously, all three of those moved up. And at the time, they were in the, you know, it was believed that this was the final year of the current car before we moved to the next gen car. So I don't know what the right move is. We've seen in the past where William Byron's been rushed to Cup, or even Eric Jones, Daniel Suarez. And Eric Jones may be an exception because he's made the playoff choice, as has William Byron. But he's won the Southern 500. He's won 2 races and an exhibition race in the Busch Clash. Byron finally pulled through this year at Daytona a few weeks ago. Suarez, in 3 years, I mean, he was rushed to Cup because, yes, he won the Xfinity title in 2016, but there was no intention of going full-time racing in 2017 until Carl Edwards announced he was retiring in the offseason. So my point is you haven't seen those drivers necessarily perform to the degree that we thought they would coming into Cup. So I think the best option is to leave him down for another year because his ceiling for next year, I believe, is maybe – excuse me, is like what Cole Custer's done this year, and that's not saying Briscoe's going to win, because we got to remember how Cole Custer won this year. I don't see really any gain in moving up for 1 year.
I'm with you. I think it's a bad choice, and as much as I think he deserves it, I think it's the wrong time for him to do that.
And you won't meet a nicer guy in the garage than Chase Briscoe, so...
Truth.
Yeah, so, you know, we want the best for him, and I'm sure everybody in the sport does. He's going to have a big following, and everywhere he's been, he's won in his career, and won quickly. So even in his first year, the part-time year with Roush and Stuart Haas just 2 years ago, he won at the Roval. So, yeah, I expect him to – I don't know if I should say expect, but I think the best option would to be to stay down for one more year. But that's gonna be a domino fall that we'll see here very soon. Also, big night on Saturday night enough for Ryan Sieg, finishing in the top five in all three stages. Bad night on the flip side for Ross Chastain, who had, I think he finished second or third in the first stage, but then got on the wall in the second stage, or at the end of the first stage. Finished 15th. Now he's out of the playoffs for right now. He's 2 points out. You got Michael Annette minus 10, Riley Herbst minus 14, Brandon Brown minus 20. Just like Cup, we probably shouldn't preview the next race since there's two more with Talladega in the Roval. But, yeah, this one looks like that was a good performance for Sieg, who I thought he would be out in the first round for sure.
I agree. The fact that he got that RCR car, reminded you of Chastain getting the Ganassi car, got a chance to run in a good piece of equipment and took every advantage that he could of it. And I thought it was a cool thing to see. I've always said Sieg is one of those guys like Chastain that gets the most out of equipment that you don't expect him to, and was really glad to see him pull it off.
Yeah, fifth and ninth is separated by 14 points right now, similar to the Cup Series. And Sieg, you mentioned the RCR car. So he ran a new chassis. Usually they're a generation behind. He gets RCR chassis and they run them, but it's about a generation or two behind. This year, or this weekend, he ran Myatt Snyder's third-place car from Pocono just 3 months ago. So, and like you said, he did everything he could with it. In fact, almost fastened Briscoe for the lead, which no one else could do the other night. So, yeah, pretty stout performance for him. And for whatever reason, Vegas just suits his style with consecutive top five finishes there. So, I don't know. I shouldn't say I don't trust this team. Because they've shown a lot of flash of speed this year, but they've also had about every mechanical failure under the book. So we'll have to see how this, if they can make it through Talladega, and if they can, they'll have to put together a solid road course race and they'll be in the next round. Anything else on Xfinity?
No, I think that's it.
Cool. Moving on to trucks. Now, when we saw the truck race Friday night, I thought we were in for a long weekend. I'll be honest with you. And that led to our discussion at the beginning about kind of the lackluster racing, because Sheldon Creed had by far the best truck on Friday night. And once he got behind Austin Hill, he can never get back to him. Once he got put back in traffic, I think he fell at like 7th or 8th, he got to 2nd, and he was so much faster than Austin Hill. Even hit the wall and then fell a second and a half back, closed to his bumper again, couldn't pass him.
Within a lap.
Yeah, within a lap or two, yes, for sure. But he could only get to his bumper, and not even his bumper, like 2-3 car lengths back. So that's when I knew that we were probably in for a long weekend.
Yeah, I agree. Vegas is a track that has put on such amazing races over the last handful of years with the age on the track and tires making a difference. And it's been one that we've looked forward to. And I don't know if it was the new tire compound they brought this week. I don't know if it was the time of year that the temperature and the whole scenario was different. I don't know what it was, but aero was just so critical this weekend, and it was just depressing across the board because we saw it in all three series. You could get through some traffic, but the closer you got to the front, the harder it was. And once you got to second place, you had to just make a dive bomb move, kind of like Gregson did earlier this year when he was showing that off at Homestead, to get by people. That was the only way that you could do it, and you had to get really lucky to clear them coming up out and have them not sweep back under you. So it's disappointing to say the least, and it was a long weekend of racing with not very many on-track passes for the lead.
Yeah, going back to the Xfinity race, I thought that outside of Kentucky, both Kentuckys, really the second one, though, was probably the worst one of the year, which with the horsepower they've got and the aero, the aero package they have, you expect good races everywhere for Xfinity. And maybe that's too high of an expectation, but this was probably the most strung out the cars have been all year. Chase Briscoe got out to like an 8-second lead at one point. Now, is that how good his car was? Maybe. And how much cleaner it mattered. But as far as the truck race, Austin Hill got a second victory of the year. Kind of, you forget about the 25th place finish now at Bristol because he's in the next round. when he entered the race on the bubble. So big win for that team. And I have him getting to the Final Four, and I truly think, you know, from this year, I know he doesn't have as many wins this year that he did last year, his first with Ettore, but I feel like he's just, even over the last 2 years, has improved so much as a race car driver, getting good equipment and making the most of it.
I agree, and it was good to see, because similar to some of the other guys that we've talked about tonight, the beginning of the year, Austin Hill looked like it was going to be one of those years where he was going to be in contention all year, and then they just kind of fell off a cliff, and it seems like they've really been struggling through the summer. And I mean, even the last couple races haven't been great, but they put it all together this weekend and were able to you know, play the right strategy and get out at the right time, and they made the most of it. They hung on for the win.
Indeed. And, you know, as the trucks go into Talladega this weekend, it is a cutoff race, so I guess we can preview that. You know, Creed, Moffitt, they look pretty good. Zane Smith is 33 points to the good. But then you get Enfinger, who's 31 to the good. And he won at Daytona, the only other super speedway they've raced at the trucks this year. So I feel confident about him. But then between 5th and 9th, Tyler Anker, Matt Kraft, and Christian Eckes and Ben Rhodes. Well, I guess that would move. Yeah, it would be those two. Sorry. He'll be in 7th in points, kind of threw me for a loop, because he's been the point leader all year long. So you got Christian Eckes, 6 points to the good on Ben Rhodes, 19 to the good on Todd Gilliland. I'm not going to say Todd Gilliland's in a must-win, but he better get 15 stage points in that first two stages. Right?
Absolutely. Yep, I'm with you. It's so silly we're only losing two people this round, but I'm with you. I feel like Enfinger's proven that he's really good on plate tracks. We've seen it in ARCA. We've seen it in trucks. He does good at super speedways. And so I don't, you know, which is probably going to be the kiss of death from us. We're all going to talk big about him. He's probably going to get knocked out in the first big accident. But I think the Eckes and Gilliland both, I think, are in close to a must-win, just because the trucks, I mean, barring a huge wreck, which we know will probably happen, all just run in a pack even more than the other series do. Because of the hole they cut through the air, there's just, you don't get away from everybody. So you don't get huge point swings unless there's a catastrophic incident, and you don't want to be living your life trying to avoid that. So I feel like they need to get up front and run up front all day if they're going to have any chance of making it out of this round.
Yeah, I mean, Eckes does come in 6 points to the good. It's Rhodes that's 9th, but I think Rhodes, with his experience, I think he's going to have a decent race as long as he can stay out of trouble and an engine failure doesn't happen, because he was pissed at Ilmor on Friday night. He thought he was going to blow up the entire race. He said he had no power plenty of times over the radio. He was none too pleased. So he did still get a respectable finish. I think I'm going to keep my original two missing. I think it's going to be Eckes and Gilliland. But, I mean, this could all be flipped around with one early crash or a big crash. So as most super speedway races are.
Exactly.
All right, Neff. I think we got to talk about some off-track news. Nothing new for silly season yet. But Hendrick Motorsports, this is kind of odd. I don't know if I've ever seen this before. Have you? Fined $100,000 for going self-reporting, going over the allotted 70 hours in the wind tunnel this year. First of all, how does that happen?
The only thing I can think is that somebody on one of the days or nights that they were in the wind tunnel stayed over longer than they had anticipated. And so it was outside of what they had planned for and didn't tell whoever keeps track of that stuff. And then when the bill came in the mail, they realized that they'd been in there longer than they thought they had. That's the only thing that makes sense, and it doesn't even make sense. I mean, knowing that organization and the attention that they pay to detail is just crazy. So it has to be something silly like that. But at the same time, I mean, and I don't know the parameters around why this limitation was put in place. My guess would be that in dealing with our crew chief, we mentioned earlier that I used to do tech talk with with crew chiefs, and knowing the amount of time that the Toyota team spent in the wind tunnel was just enormous. And so I think as a means of trying to protect owners from themselves, which is what they always try to do, and it never helps, I'm assuming that's why they put this limitation in. But whatever it is, Hendrick figured out that they had violated it, self-reported, and got a big old fine and forfeit 10 hours of wind tunnel time in 2021, which will be a lot of time that I'm sure is going to be devoted to the new 2022 car that they're now going to be behind them.
Yeah, so next year they go from 90 hours to 80 hours in the wind tunnel, which is a big deal if, like you said, is going towards the 2022 car and the 2022 season, which will be fresh to all the teams. So, yeah, have you ever seen anything like this happen? I can't recall.
No, I don't remember it. You know, back when we first put in the testing limitation, I vaguely remember somebody getting hit with something because they figured out that a team took a late model trailer to a track somewhere and actually tested a cup car that they thought they had looking like a late model or something. But no, this was a new one for me for sure.
All right, Neff, we knew it was coming. NASCAR came out with the 2021 schedule on Wednesday afternoon. Really, it was an all-day event, which I heard was going to happen with different tracks. You know, they got to engage on social media and announce before NASCAR came out with the full announcement of the schedule. Let's go over a couple of those changes really quickly. Tuesday night, it was announced Kentucky and Chicagoland Speedway gone, off the schedule for 2021. We'll get into that here in a minute. The Spring Bristol race will now run on dirt. We also heard that on Tuesday night. Michigan, we'll get into that, definitely. Michigan loses one of its dates. Darlington and Atlanta add a second date. Texas loses its spring race, which we talked about last week on the podcast, and adds the All-Star race and the Circuits of the America, the road course, as well as the Cup Series will run Road America the 4th of July weekend and the Indy road course. I know you want to get on that one. And we knew Nashville is going to replace Dover, and that race will be in June. Already knew that. So, of all these changes, there's nine of them. There's five new tracks on the schedule, which is the most since 1969. It's the first dirt race in 50 years for the Cup Series. There's a lot of changes to kind of talk about. So, out of all these changes, what's the biggest one that stands out to you?
Well, I guess that depends. Biggest one for me personally is the fact that they're taking the oval away from Indy. That just infuriates me. I like it or don't like it, the Brickyard has always been a crown jewel race. It's one of the big four. Back when you had different, you know, I don't want to call them incentive type opportunities where if you won the big four, you got an extra $1 million or whatever. Indy has always been the largest crowd, the biggest purse. And then the largest crowd kind of went away, although it's still been right around there. And the purse has still been substantial, although it's not as big as Daytona anymore. But it's got the history. It's got the tradition. There is no history and tradition with the freaking road course. And you have officially taken away any status of a crown jewel from this event. And it's now just another gimmicky roval. And I decided, if they want to do a doubleheader and run the Roval on Saturday and then run the Oval on Sunday, I'd have been fine with that. But the fact that you're taking away the Oval from Indy with the, and like it or don't like it, there's a ton of history with NASCAR there since 1994.
Yeah, 27 years.
And they flushed it.
Let me jump in here, Neff, because I know you got more to say probably about Bristol, definitely, and as well as some other tracks. I just got off a Zoom call with Steve O'Donnell and Ben Kennedy, and, you know, there's this – Indy's obviously a crown jewel, the Indianapolis Brickyard 400. Well, presumably you'd think now it's not. Steve O'Donnell will argue on that. He thinks it is.
I'll argue all day. Come on.
Steve O'Donnell thinks it still is a crown jewel event, and he pointed back to the road course race with the Xfinity Series on July 4th this year, which, let's face it, it was a great race. We knew right then. Once we were watching that race, you see Allmendinger, Briscoe, and Cindric three wide down the front stretch with two to go. That we were probably going to race on the road course next year, which is unfortunate because, you know, if you look at the Brickyard 400 the last past three, 4 years, it's been really pretty good for Indy standards. So That one is a tight, a tough bullet to swallow, and it does, in my opinion, take away a lot of the prestige of Indy.
Absolutely.
And then,
I'll argue with him all day on it. It's the road course at Indy has existed for, I don't know, when the first Formula One race was, sometime early, late 90s, early 2000s, but there's no history to that. There's over 100 years of history in the Oval at Indianapolis, and that history has been there for 26 years for the 400, and now it's not. It's gone.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's a tough pill to swallow. And on top of that, you know, we were texting back and forth Tuesday night, and we've heard rumblings inside of the NASCAR world for a week or two now that Bristol is going to go to dirt, at least this, one of the races, which turned out to be the spring race.
If you were going to make it one of them, the spring race is what makes sense.
Absolutely. But I love Bristol. I said, you know, 2 weeks ago as we previewed the cutoff race in the round of 16, that is my favorite track. It's the best track to watch a race. And I know World of Outlaws ran a dirt race there in 01, I think 2000 as well. But it also didn't have, 32 degrees of banking as it does right now. It had 24 back then. So this kind of, I don't know how this is going to work, but it looks like they're going to make it an event. And Jerry Caldwell, the president of Bristol Motor Speedway, was on a Zoom call earlier on Wednesday and noted that the fans wanted this. And I know fans want dirt racing, or they want to test it out, but I don't know about Bristol.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I loved it when they did it there. When they had the sprint cars, they were screaming around that track, and the show was great. The race was great. So, I mean, I think it'll be a good race, but from a pragmatic viewpoint, I feel like it's an undue burden on the teams, because you're basically making them do the R&D and build a car for one race. If you're going to run on dirt at the cup level, you need to have two or three or four, really, dirt races. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you're just going to have one, I just think it's a ridiculous burden to put on the teams to have to come up with that. So I'm for dirt. Yes, I'd like to see them go to a traditional dirt track. I'm okay with them doing it at Bristol, but there needs to be more than one dirt race. Just doing it as a one-off, I just don't think it's fair to the teams, and I don't even think it's fair to the drivers. I mean, it's just not going to get enough time for them to hone their skills and put on a good show.
Especially if practice is limited, and Steve O'Donnell said today, not at Bristol specifically, it seems like they're kind of up in the air on what they're going to do for that race. You'd hope there'd be practice. It looked like there'll be qualifying heats, but he didn't confirm that. But you'd hope they get practice. A lot of the races next year aren't going to get practice. He said the 500, the Coke 600, and the championship race will all have practice and qualifying. Aside from that, it doesn't look too good right now, obviously, according to him. We got to talk about the road courses. Neff, you and I love road courses. I grew up going to dirt races and road courses. Watkins Glen, baby. Now we got six of them on the cup schedule. And the Clash, so really seven. That's a bit much in my opinion. I love road courses, don't get me wrong, and these are all great tracks. We added the Indy road course. We just talked about that. You know, it was a good race, the Xfinity race. I'd rather run on the oval. Road America, historic venue, and then COTA, another historic upcoming venue. It's kind of road course overload right now.
I feel like we're the IRL. From around 2000, you know, they started the IRL and said we were going to go back to oval racing with American race car drivers. And within like 6 years, they had more road courses than they had ovals. And I feel like we're headed down that path. I'm cool with going to some road courses. I've always said we should have at least four, similar to super speedways. I think that's a fair amount of effort for the teams to have to go through to run four races. But now we've got two Rovals. I was really honestly surprised that the midsummer Daytona race wasn't back on the road course, mm-hmm. to be honest with you. That would have given us seven. I've wanted us to go to Elkhart Lake for a while, so I'm excited about that. I'm with you. I think we've gone a little overboard if they were going to go overboard on something, I'd have rather had a dozen short tracks than six road courses. So maybe that'll happen in 2022.
And that goes back to the Bristol point, too, you know, with the point you just made of more short tracks. Really, you know, we've got six short tracks still, technically, with two Richmond, two Martinsville, two Bristol, but one of them's a dirt race. So I don't, I mean, it's a short track, but I don't really consider that a short track, you know, a classic short track venue now, or a race anyway. But with road courses, look, I love them to death, and they're fun to watch. They're some of the best racing, close, beaten, banging, you know, the whole nine yards, but six of them, and then plus the Daytona Roval for the Clash. There, you know, that race wasn't entertaining with 40 cars. It sure as hell ain't going to be entertaining with 16, 17. But that's my opinion. I want to talk to you about this because we'd heard, you know, a few months ago, probably 4 or 5 months ago at this point, Chicagoland might be off the schedule, might never come back on the schedule. It's not, at least for this next year, as well as Kentucky. Now, there's these two tracks are very different. They're both mile and a half. Yes, it's about the only similarity they have. Chicagoland's very worn out. And it put on, let's not forget, 2018, one of the best races of the decade. And one of the best
finishes.
Best finishes, for sure. But the race from start to finish was great.
The race was okay.
I thought it was pretty good. But the finish was awesome.
Right.
I'm disappointed in that. And that race is going to be shifted to Road America, essentially, and NASCAR's partnering with Road America for that week. So, kind of bummed about Chicago. What about you?
Don't understand it. You're talking about the second or third biggest market in the country. You really don't do New York. Yes, I know Watkins Glen, Pocono, Dover are all a relatively short drive, but there's not a track in New York, which they've always talked about. And this is less than an hour from downtown Chicago. You're talking about that huge market. The Midwest is a hotbed for racing in general. And, I mean, when they lost one date, I was hopeful that they would always keep one. And now you've lost that. I don't understand why we have no races in Chicago and we still have two in Kansas. That's the part that I'm having a hard time stomaching. Yes, I know there's a casino in Kansas. I'm pretty sure there's a casino not that far from Joliet. So if you're taking a race away from a mile and a half track, I don't understand why you leave two at Kansas and take everything away from Chicago.
And then you also add a mile and a half at Atlanta. And, you know, Atlanta's a good racetrack, and it looks like they're building a $1 billion casino, and really not just a casino, everything. It looks like, I'm sure you've seen pictures of it online.
Yep.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be incredible, and it's going to be a project. So they would deserve another race for that effort, kind of like, you know, we see Phoenix get the championship race for the renovations they've made in the infield and outside the track. Darlington, though, they also get another race. I'll never complain about racing at Darlington. And the good thing about the Darlington race is it's going to be the low downforce package, which is great.
I don't understand why we're not doing low downforce everywhere, but that's another story.
Nah, it's baby steps at this point.
they're doing both of them, and they're doing the low downforce at Nashville as well. I don't see why we don't do low downforce everywhere, but we'll take everything we can get. You know, small victories, as they might call them. So yeah, I'm thrilled about Darlington. I was pissed when they lost the date to begin with. I was doubly pissed when they really talked about taking everything away from them. And then we did the throwback thing, and now you're giving them a reward for kind of being the startup of the rebirth of the sport. I think they deserve it. I think it's a classic venue, and I'm glad we're going back for a second time now.
I will say that some of the travel that the teams are going to have to do next year, there's no midweek races, and Ben Kennedy kind of shied away from it being about ratings in the Zoom call. It looks clearly why they're not going to do any midweek races.
I would assume.
Yeah, but some of the travel the teams have in May, they go from Texas to Charlotte, you know, West Urn, all the way back to the East Coast, then to Sonoma in 3 weeks. Then they go back to Texas for the All-Star race, and then make the Nashville Pocono. There's a lot of travel. There's a span of 5 races where 3 of them are on road courses. So that'll be something to watch. But then you look at the playoffs, and really there's no change except for Texas and Kansas. They're just swapped, the 7th and 8th races of the playoffs. Phoenix will get a second year as the championship race, which I think is deserved. You know, this year, obviously, they won't be able to have full occupancy in the crowd. And Pocono, too. We didn't hit on Pocono much, but they're getting their doubleheader back, which I think is cool. The only scheduled one of the year.
Yeah, I was surprised at that, to be totally honest. I really thought that Pocono would lose a date this year, and I'm glad they're not. I mean, I've always enjoyed Pocono. I think it's a true test because it's about compromise. You can't just go there and mad it the whole time. So I was glad to see them hang on to two dates.
I think they had to.
Again, I'm kind of bummed about Kentucky. I know it hasn't been great, but those fans did it right. They supported the Xfinity Series for years, finally got rewarded with a cup date, and showed up for the cup races, and now you're yanking it away from them. I don't know. I think that sends a bad, bad message, and a worse message, if it happens, will be if they go to Iowa in 2022, because Iowa hasn't supported crap that they've run at their track in the last freaking 10 years. They don't deserve a cup date because they haven't shown up for it.
Yeah, I think Pocono had to get a doubleheader. I think NASCAR probably wanted to test it out with fans since we didn't get fans this year and see how that's – I mean, all three of the doubleheaders, four or five really, if you consider Xfinity weekends, had no fans this year. So I think NASCAR would want to test that out. We went over all the changes and all the new additions. Anything you would have – I'm sure there's a lot you would have changed, but anything that you want to add to what we've talked about?
Like I said, I would have rather seen us go to some different new short tracks, but they're splitting it up a little bit. Hopefully they'll keep dicing up this pie. I'll be stunned if they ever take dates away from Daytona and Talladega, which is what I really feel like should happen, and give those to some short tracks. So we'll see. I'm encouraged by the changes, despise going to the Indy Road Course. Other than that, overall, I'm pleased that we're making steps in the right direction.
Well, speaking of Talladega, let's get into predictions for this weekend's race. We'll start with the truck race. That's the first race of the weekend. Do you want first dabs or do you want me to take it?
I'll let you take it.
Cool. And I'll let you take Xfinity first. I'm probably going to steal your pick, but I'm going with Grant Enfinger. He's proven to be really good at these tracks for whatever reason. He's got his first win at Talladega 4 years ago now. Won at Vegas, obviously, then won at Daytona earlier this year to kick off the season to lock himself in. So I got Grant Enfinger winning his third Super Speedway race this weekend.
I know I keep beating this dead horse. It's going to come through at some point. I'm going with Johnny Sauter to win. He has had the worst luck in the history of luck, even worse than Ryan Sieg. So I'm going with Sauter to upset the apple cart and win without being in the playoffs.
It's so surprising to see him 15th in points. And I will say he did have a solid run this week, still finished outside the top 10 at Vegas. But his radio was a lot more tame this weekend compared to other weeks. So who you got for Xfinity as we have the middle race of the Xfinity Series and the opening round of the playoffs?
I'm going to go with Cindric. I feel like those Penske cars are just really good at super speedways.
Can't believe you went against Colleague.
I'm going to think. I'm probably going to regret that. But I'm feeling like Cindric's had a rough patch right here, and they need some momentum.
Cindric's a good pick, obviously, and he does perform well at super speedways. But there are also only two Fords in the field, which could hurt their chances, although Briscoe and Cindric just at Daytona last month were in contention for the victory. But the guy who won Daytona, I think, and won Talladega earlier in the year, I think he's going to win three races this year, win all the super speedways except for the first one when Noah Gragson won in Daytona. I got Justin Haley. I think that Colleague has proven what they're worth on super speedways, and it's worth a lot. And it'll be interesting to see if A.J. Allmendinger is as loyal to his teammates this week. Because he mentioned post-race at Daytona how, you know, he always looks out for his teammates. And he didn't get that same respect from Ross Chastain, at least he felt, on the last lap. So I don't think that'll cause any friction. But I'm going to go with Justin Haley because Kalik's so good at those tracks. Now, this is going to be a fun one because I feel like we might pick two of the lower four right now in the battle, the playoff battle for Cup. I'm going to let you go first, though. Who do you got getting to the round of eight, or do you see a surprise winner, someone outside the playoffs?
No, I'm going with Hamlin. Hamlin is still, right now, I think the best guy on Super Speedways in the Cup Series, and I don't see it going anywhere else at this point.
Yeah, Hamlin obviously won the last two Daytona 500s, three of the last five. Definitely a good pick. I'm going with Clint Bowyer. I said he'd win, he'd make it into the round of eight. That was my prediction, you know, before this past round. I think he does it. I think he's clearly a very good super speedway racer. He's always in contention late. He's only won two of them, both at Talladega. That, however, was in the tandem era of racing when he won in 2010, 2011. I think he gets back to victory lane this weekend, and I truly think one of those final four are going to win, whether it's Dillon, Almirola, Bowyer, or Kyle Busch, and then he'll take another spot away from one of the top guys. That's my prediction.
That would be interesting.
All right, well, we talked about him a little bit earlier, but we have a conversation coming up with Ross Chastain. He finished 16th over the weekend at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Ran better than that, and I think he's going to run really well this weekend at Talladega, as Kalik seems to dominate at the Super Speedways over the past year and a half or so. So let's get to our conversation with Ross Chastain. All right, Ross, you started fourth on Saturday at Las Vegas, finished 16th, only your fourth finish outside the top 10 this year, scored 9 stage points in the first stage. Overall, just take us through your race.
Yeah, it started off really good. I was a short run to the beginning there and restarts. We were able to take advantage of that and get up there and lead a few laps. And then I hit the wall. So driver error. Just flat drove at the fence and was never as fast after that. Been a few parts and pieces. Aerodynamics were not as fluid as they had been. All the things you don't want. So these Xfinity cars are resilient, and they'll take a beating, but not a hard hit to the wall like that. So we just kind of struggled there, stage two, and then we're gonna get a good finish, you know, top 10 somewhere in there. I think 6th, 7th, 8th maybe, and we had a cracked valve stem in the left rear. On our final, we cracked it on the final pit stop, so that it's a fluke deal. And then, you know, finished the race with a flat left rear tire, and that was tough. But I, you know, we didn't crash, we didn't have to pit. It was very scary those last couple laps because I didn't really know what was happening. But I knew there was only 4, 3, 2, 1. Oh my! All right, we made it. Okay, somehow we made it. Then the tire went all the way flat. As I was coming down to do our lug nut check, so got lucky there. It's one of those nights that reminds you how humbling the sport can be.
Ross, I'm a little curious on just this weekend in general at Vegas. They brought a new right side tire. The cars seem to be more aero-dependent than they've been in a while at Vegas. Did the tire combination have some kind of an impact in that aero, or were those two things kind of mutually exclusive?
Mike, the best I was told, the Cup cars had a new tire, but truck and Xfinity, we were using up the old allotment from the past tire. So we were actually on a different tire than Cup. So that's for right side, left side was the same, but Cup went to their new right side, just a different construction. From what I heard, it was not much different for them. They didn't really see any major trends. They looked the same, felt the same. I think it was just dirty air is bad, just like it always is.
Ross, after the first race in the round of 12, you sit 2 points out. Now, it's not a bad spot in the, you know, for the first race, but we're going to Talladega. So how do you feel about the positioning heading into one of probably the most unpredictable race in the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, it's not where you want to be, right? We've had such a consistent year and only had a few hiccups, and you know, we fire off in the playoffs, and on lap 42 or somewhere in there, I drive it in the fence. Like, that's not the way that I need to be in a race car, and not the way that we need to be. So definitely not. Doesn't feel good this week, you know. Feels, like I said, pretty humbling, but you know, high reward for high risk at Talladega. If you take a lot of risk, you have the potential for a lot of reward, but with that same thought is a lot of risk, and it could go bad. So I've wrecked at these super speedways. Well, I've wrecked a lot in general, but I've wrecked at the super speedways in the front, in the back, in the middle, and everywhere, and even on pit roads. So there's no safe place. We know we'll have fast cars. We know college racing is incredible. AJ Allmendinger, Justin Haley, and Anthony Alfredo, he's ran a few now with us in the RCR car. So, you know, the three and now four of us can really, you know, make moves and work together, and it works good. So looking forward to that, and, you know, go control the race. That's my mentality for it.
And that was kind of – I was going to go down that road a little bit on the strategy side of things. Does it affect your mindset because of the fact that you're back by the cutoff line versus well ahead as to whether you're going to push for stage points and push to be up front? Or is that just being up front the mindset the colleague has when you go to these super speedway races?
Oh, definitely aggressive. You know, try to, like I said, control the race. It really, for Matt Colleague, you know, right now he can't be at the track with the COVID restrictions. But so when he, you know, and even when he's there, but definitely now watching from Ohio on TV, he's not happy if his cars are not up front, and that's any track. And, you know, in a lot of places where, you know, downforce dependent and, you know, a downforce track where you're struggling for mechanical and aero grip, you know, we're trying as hard as we can, but at super speedways, you really can not try hard a lot of the race, like, you know, and then make a run at the end. But he doesn't want that. No, he has no interest in it. So it plays well into my mentality and my driving style. But I've spent years in the Xfinity Series and every race in the Cup Series, actually, playing it safe and just making a run at the end. And more often than not, I'm in the wreck or caused the wreck, trying to come up through there. You know, I'm not gonna act like I haven't. I've definitely made more than my fair share of mistakes, but he wants us up front, and he wants to see his cars leading the race and controlling it, and all of us up there. So that plays perfectly in, and I don't argue with that mentality.
Yeah,
he lets us do it and have the free rein to go try to control the race.
Yeah, and controlling the race is obviously something that Colleague has done on the super speedways over the past year, year and a half in Xfinity. So I'm curious, Ross, you guys are committed to one another, clearly, you, AJ, and Justin Haley all. I think Justin said after the Daytona win last month that with 10 to go, that's the number where you guys don't have to, you know, essentially commit to one another anymore. How hard is it to stay committed for a whole race, through a whole race together?
It's not, because, yeah, we all want to win the race, but throughout the race, I know, you know, that it's in my best interest to help those guys and for them to help me and put in that time and keep building that trust with each other. You know, unfortunately, we got down to the final corner, the last lap at Daytona in July, and I made a move. Justin pushed me, and I made a move on AJ to pass him, and it was going to be for the win. You know, he blocked. I ran into him. It was my fault. It was a sucker hole trying to go to his left, go to the bottom. And I ran right into his back bumper and spun him out and crashed both of us. And, you know, we don't have those two cars now to race because they're still getting fixed at the chassis shop. So I know we'll have two bullets, but it's tough. It was obviously, it went terribly wrong. Luckily, Justin was there in third to win it for Colleague, or else my life would have been a lot worse. But still, it's throughout the race. No, it's, we just find each other's bumper, and you know, and then we do our deal.
Right on. So now that we've gone a little bit into the Talladega side, I'd like to go down the Ganassi road a little bit. I mean, I know a lot of us were a little surprised that you didn't go into the 42 this year when Larson lost the ride. And I know a lot of the talk was that there was a plan in place, and now we kind of see that plan. And I don't know if that was the plan all along, but obviously you've put in the time and you've done it the right way to get to this ride. How rewarding is it to you to know that you're finally going to be in a full-time ride at the Cup level?
Oh, it's incredible, Mike. It's a dream of a dream. It's a dream of a dream that I had, you know. This was not supposed to happen. I know probably it wasn't supposed to happen for a lot of guys, but it was never a plan when I was a kid. You know, my family didn't race. My dad did some hobby racing at our local track. He rented his first race truck, and they had several of them that you could rent. Then he bought one, then he sold it. I remember when I was really young, he raced a little bit, and I started, you know, just hobby stuff. It was never with any thought, and you know, I was 12, 13, 14 years old, and I was like, man, I'm going to be a NASCAR driver. My dad was very clear with me one night in the shop, like, no, you're not. This is not why we're doing this. You're not. Understand this. Like, we are here to have fun. You know, we're going to have more fun than anybody. We're going to win more races than anybody, but we're not here to try to get to NASCAR. And it was just, you know, and so it put mind at ease, and it made it more fun for my whole childhood till I was 18 years old. And then the start of the truck series, just by some good fortune, run good and then get more races. Like, that was the worst thing I could have ever done, right? Was run good in my first race and finish 10th. And that sparked the interest to keep going. So, no, it is rewarding even for the, you know, I mean, yeah, we signed on with Chip and everybody took Nasty Racing just over 2 years ago, you know, middle to late summer in 2018. But as y'all know, that was a totally different world. And that was a totally different set of circumstances. So to have all this come true, we all stuck with each other, you know, and yeah, this year, earlier in the year, we have an Xfinity championship to go win. You know, that's what our goal was, and we were willing to keep down that path, and we didn't want to, you know, upset any watermelon carts along the way, and we were committed to Matt Colleg and Nutrien Ag Solutions. So it's, you know, I'm glad we stuck with it. Yeah, there's been a lot of moving parts, but every time I've ever talked to Chip, he's been working on it, and he, you know, finally got to a point where he was able to do it for me.
So I want to ask a follow-up right to that, what you just said right there. Obviously, like you mentioned, the first time you signed with Ganassi was 2 years ago to run the 3 Xfinity race. The plan was to run the 2019 schedule. We all know what happened there. But when you got this call from Chip to run the 42 in 2021, what was your initial reaction? Was there any tears, or what was the reaction for you?
Silence at first. I didn't know what to say. we had a little bit of small talk, and then he got right into it. Chip is, when Chip calls, I've learned that you got to be on your A game. You got to be ready. He's calling you for a reason. You know, he's got a lot on his plate. He's a world-renowned racer and you know, known worldwide in all racing circles. You know, you said Chip Ganassi, I imagine in any, you know, racing it was a short call, but he asked, you know, of course, yes, I want to. Let's figure out all the details. So, I was actually, it was very, very close to whenever we announced he was ready to get it out there, let everybody know. So, a lot happened quick, but it was, in another sense, in another thought, it was a long time coming for us.
So I know we don't get into all the details because that's kind of private, but is there at least a footnote in there somewhere about a potential IndyCar ride?
Man, I wish. Oh, that would be one step at a time, right? Maybe if I get a little, you know, have a few good runs, I can, you know, that could be my Christmas wish list. I'd love to. I mean, that's one of the coolest parts about all this is his group of drivers he has that drive for Chip Ganassi Racing. I mean, right, first and foremost, Kurt Busch, I'm going to be side-by-side teammates with a champion of the Cup Series, and I mean, we announced he wins the next race. I mean, that was a way to go and one-up me there, but he's just an awesome guy, and he's already helped me a lot, and I can't even imagine what he's going to help me with when I'm actually week in and week out driving a car that's prepared side by side with his. And, you know, one of the first texts that I actually got whenever it started started to go out, go public with the release, was actually Jimmy Johnson texted me, and hey, I guess he just said, hey, I guess we're teammates. Like, you know, it's just I knew it, but I hadn't thought of it that way. And so for him to be over on the IndyCar side now, you know, I want to watch him and see how he does it. Of course, he's going to handle it way better than I probably ever could, but just see how he adapts to those cars and be plugged in a little bit, and just watch, you know, from afar next year as he goes in races. But it's definitely, you know, you got a guy like Scott Dixon. I mean, goodness gracious, I'm teammates with those guys, so it's awesome.
Got a couple more for you, Ross. I want to go back to the Xfinity Series this year with colleague. Statistically, you're having a really good season. 13 top fives, 23 top tens. Yet to get to victory lane, and I know you're asked about that all the time, but I'm curious, do those numbers matter to you, or is it solely focused on winning the championship?
It's solely focused on winning, just in general. Winning stages, going fast, winning races is all that's why I get up in the morning. Now, I will admit, I was not always I'm not a stat guy. I don't live off of them, but when I look back and compared to the competition, it is pretty incredible what we've been able to do. So I don't take that lightly, because I realize that, I mean, I have celebrated a successful year as four top 10, you know, that was the whole, I mean, that was incredible just a few years ago. So I don't take it lightly. But we want to be better. We definitely want to win, you know, I mean, everybody does. So, I don't take it, you know, for any more than it is. I realize how good of a season we've had, but we're racers. We, Bruce Slicker, Andrew, our engineer, and everybody at College Racing, we just want to win. So that's all we're focused on.
Neff, you got a final question?
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, kind of dovetailing on both of those, you've won in pretty much everything I've ever seen you drive, and, you know, IndyCar is that little carrot out there at Ganassi Racing, but there's some other vehicles that Ganassi funds as well. Is there any other vehicle that you haven't driven or raced yet that is something that you would really like to get behind the wheel of and try out?
I mean, I want to race anything. You know, if there was ever opportunities, I would pursue them. I want to run Xfinity races. I want to run truck races. Now I realize with that, you know, the focus is on the 42 car next year. You know, that's where the week in and week out, day in and day out, my mind will be trying to be the best driver I can be for the 42. But yeah, I'm just a racer, Mike, and I just want to go race. And if it's got, you know, on the front bumper, it says Chip Ganassi Racing, that's just a dream. And so that's, you know, you're going to have best of the best. And more than just the cars or the vehicles you're racing, it's the people. And the people that Chip surrounds himself with, from the IndyCar side to the NASCAR side, just getting plugged in with those guys, you know, more now that we know what we're doing, and just interacting with them day to day and watching how they operate is just unlike anything I've ever been a part of, for sure. I mean, right, it's the upper level of motorsports. And so, I'll race anything, anywhere, anytime. Y'all know that.
Unfortunately, you got the Kyle Busch rule, though, in NASCAR anyway. Ross, I want to get you out of here on a fan question, and it comes from at Virginia Chip, and he wants to know, how's the Melon Man brand going?
It's good. Yeah, it is. Kevin, the guy that runs it, he takes care of it a lot. You know, I obviously get in there when I can and help, but it was just an idea we had with the boys over at Spire, and you know, we got it rolling. You know, it's one of those things that it's an idea for a while, kind of toying with it, kind of like, I don't know if this will work. We just wanted more than just racing merch, right? We wanted more than just the standard driver t-shirts with cars and sponsors and stuff, and give people an option, right? You don't have to buy it, but if you want to, it's a different, you know, it's a different lifestyle, kind of a mentality of just, you know, smiling and enjoying life and laughing at watermelon. I mean, it's yeah, you got a watermelon on your shirt or your hat. Like, laugh about it. Enjoy life. So, I mean, I, one of the coolest things that I just remember when we were getting it going, there was tons of emails and texts and this and that artwork. And we won, I guess we won the Daytona. I believe it was the Daytona Xfinity race last July. And I got out of victory lane. As soon as I got my phone, my first text was to the group. I said, look, we are going live on Monday. I don't care what we have to do. Because there was, you know, for weeks, there was this reason why we couldn't go live. There was this reason. Like, I was like, the website is going up. And we are announcing Monday morning that we are up and running. We're doing this. And I was like, we're not letting this opportunity of winning at Daytona slip by us. So, we, you know, we do, obviously, you guys, I think, know the, you know, we do the race win t-shirts and customize it for that. We haven't done any this year, unfortunately. We haven't won yet, but we're prepared for all that. But more than that, it's just an outlet just to smile about and give people reason to smile, right? We just want people to enjoy life and wear a funny watermelon shirt and have to explain it. That's, you know, somebody look at it when I'm wearing something, like, what in the world is that? Cool to get to explain it to them.
Well, good stuff. Ross, always appreciate your time, and good luck this weekend in Talladega.
All right, thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, y'all, there you have it. Good conversation there with Ross about the 2020 season so far with Colleague. His Talladega outlook for the playoffs, obviously entering the second race in the round of 12, just 2 points below Harrison Burton, who is sitting on the cut line, and also moving to full-time next year with Chip Ganassi Racing at the cup level. It should be fun to watch. Another long podcast this week. Obviously, NASCAR coming out with the 2021 schedule. We had to talk about it. And I'm upbeat about the changes overall. I like the direction NASCAR is moving. Kind of going back to its roots. Two races at Darlington, Atlanta. Not a big fan of the Indy Oval being let go. And moving to the road course, I would agree with Neff that if you had a doubleheader with maybe run one day, one the next, that would be cool. But not a fan of letting the Oval go in totality. But also not a fan at all of Bristol on dirt, but we'll see how it goes. Maybe I'll be proven wrong. If it doesn't work after 1 year, there's always the option to not do it again. So we'll have to wait and see how come March. But that's it for this week's show. Make sure to go on to Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star rating and review. And until next week's show, where we review Talladega, we out.